It's the Reader's Notebook for Wednesday, March 4th, 2015. For more than 140 years, the fourth day of March was designated by federal law as Presidential Inauguration Day. That all changed when the adoption of the 20th Amendment to the Constitution in 1933 moved the swearing-in ceremony to January 20th. In 1789, when all of this got started, George Washington's first inauguration was delayed until April 30th because neither House of Congress could manage a quorum until earlier that month. The electoral vote count also ran late, as did notifying Washington of his election. Then there was the time it took for him to travel to New York, the country's first capital city. It is well to remember that in those days, messages could be delivered only as quickly as a skilled rider could maneuver a fast horse. By the time of Washington's second inaugural ceremony in 1793, all the bugs had been worked out, and the formalities went forward on March 4th without incident. That would hold true until Franklin D. Roosevelt's first inauguration on March 4, 1933. By then, with improved communication and rapid transportation, there was no need to wait 4 months after the general election for the president, especially a new president, to take office, and the so-called lame duck amendment was quickly adopted. All that is constitutionally required to inaugurate a president is the oath of office. All the rest of it, the parade, the pomp and circumstance, the series of grand balls, even the inaugural address, is optional. As to the oath, it is usually administered by the Chief Justice, but it need not be. Anyone who is legally authorized to witness an oath may do that, even a notary public. And that is exactly what happened in 1924 when Calvin Coolidge assumed the office on the death of President Harding. Coolidge was in Vermont visiting with his father, a local notary, who swore in the new president by the light of a kerosene lamp at 2:47 a.m. With nothing left to say, Coolidge went back to bed and returned to Washington the next day. A Bible is customary for the swearing-in, but that isn't required either. At least two presidents, John Quincy Adams and Franklin Pierce, used law books, and in 1963, Lyndon Johnson placed his hand on a Catholic missal that had belonged to John Kennedy when he took the oath aboard Air Force One in Dallas, Texas. So help me God isn't part of the official wording either, but almost all of the presidents have added it. It is also customary for the outgoing president to accompany his successor to the ceremony, but it isn't required, and it hasn't always happened. John Adams, John Quincy Adams, and Andrew Johnson all refused to do so. And while Woodrow Wilson rode with Warren Harding to the Capitol, he declined to remain for the rest of it because of his extremely frail health. Despite impeccable planning, things have sometimes just gone wrong at inauguration ceremonies. Chief justices and presidents have mangled the words of the oath, Bibles have been dropped, and bitter cold has forced the event inside. But in spite of all of that, the occasional disputed election, times of war and economic upheaval, and four assassinations, our representative democracy has survived, and the torch has been passed without bloodshed. I'm J.D. Reeder, and this is the Reader's Notebook for March 4th, 2015. Write it on your heart that every day is the best day of the year.